Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. Coming up on the programme this week,
people were less inclined to seek support. They feared their concerns weren't as important as others.
Those within the fire service asked about how they rated their mental health. One in five described it as poor or very poor. Now, that strikes me as a particularly high number.
People were very focused on the new challenges they were facing, both professionally and personally. Well, is my family okay? Can I keep my family safe? Can I perform my duties properly? There was a lot of areas to juggle at that point in time, I think, and no certainty.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Hey, we're back on Mental Health Monday after the Easter break. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for once again checking out the podcast. For those who weren't aware, depending on when you're listening to this one, we've just had the Easter break and the bank holiday. I did that cheating thing where you take 4 days off work, but because of the long weekend, you get like 10 days off in a row. It was absolute bliss. But sorry I've not been with you for that period of time. Got a lot of time to make up, but we'll crack straight on this week's Mental Health Monday, episode 199. You will never guess what number episode it is next. Episode 200. And I sort of thought, you know, do I need to do something that marks the occasion, 200 episodes of Mental Health Monday? And I don't want to get too navel-gazing-y about it, and I'll probably say a few things next week just to thank people who've been part of the programme. But I think as much as anything, we're only just partly there in terms of the journey and the conversation. So let's just crack on. Let's keep the conversations going, and we'll have another conversation on the way next week. Episode 200. Can you believe it? Loads of stuff in this week's episode. We're going to speak to the team from the Firefighters Charity. Now, loads of different organisations, industry bodies are sort of trying to work out the impact of the pandemic and the effect it's had on people working within those services. And we've heard different industries sort of over the last few months start to get to grips with that. The Mind Blue Light programme has found some new stats, and they suggest that actually things are really, really difficult for fire service personnel. So I wanted to give a platform to the Firefighters Charity, who are going to set out what they've got in place, the support networks that they have in place as well, for staff to reach out to if they need support. So the Firefighters Charity guest Jane Rosso is on the program this week. She is their psychological lead. Wanting to flag up an event which is coming up now. This would have been taking place somewhere in an actual venue. Instead, through the Hope Street Theatre, Mallet in the Community are putting together a real talk show, and that's going to be taking place on the Thursday, the 29th of April at 7 p.m. and Friday, the 30th of April at 7 p.m. Now, you can get tickets to that now, which will then send you a link to watch the visual online event on your chosen date. So Mallet in the Community, that's M-A-L-I-T, they've been on the show before, good friends of the show, and their Real Talk event where they're discussing the issue of male mental health and suicide prevention, that event taking place at the end of April. There are two dates, and depending on when you pick, you get a link to watch on your chosen date. I'll put a link and the overall link in the Mental Health Monday Facebook group so you can check that out. They're a great organisation doing brilliant work, and I've been able to work with them myself in the past as well. So well done for putting that together. I think it's going to be another cracking night. Mallet in the Community, do check that out. Let's crack on though with the conversation with Jane Rosso, the psychological lead for the Firefighters Charity. And of course, we discuss what a difficult year it's been for those in the emergency services, and what a difficult year it's been for absolutely everybody out there.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody's found the last year particularly challenging. Firefighters, although they've still been working throughout the pandemic, they have had changes to their job roles, which have created additional demands on them. So, for example, they might have been helping at vaccination centres, or they may have been assisting the ambulance service, driving ambulances as first responders, or they may have been involved in body retrieval, which is very different to their normal day to day and has quite a significant impact on how they see their role. And alongside those sort of professional pressures of working in higher COVID risk environments, you know, they also have concerns for their families. You know, am I going to bring back COVID to my family? Is my family going to be safe? And also the normal pressures that we've all had about homeschooling, juggling, and relationship pressures, because quite a lot of firefighters are married to or in relationships with people who are in the health and social care sector, who have obviously had their own pressures and impacts to deal with, and that COVID risk to everybody's family.
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, from what you've said there, even with a change to job roles, it didn't take them any further away from the front line. If anything, it took them much closer to the front line, and also maybe in a role that they weren't necessarily used to. So there's no surprise at all there that would have an impact. What sort of things, Jane, did the people within the service say? Did they speak openly at the start? Was it a case of, we just need to crack on because this is the job that we do? Were they able to express that, particularly in those early few months?
As a charity, we normally offer a residential model to our beneficiaries, and obviously all our residential centres closed. So in those first few months of the pandemic, we were trying to respond to our beneficiaries in the best way we could. So behind the scenes, we were setting up increased digital services, things like online counselling. So we were getting phone calls from people at that point who were really struggling, to be honest, in those early stages. And I think it was a big period of readjustment for everybody. And so people were less inclined to come at that point because they would think they were cracking on and doing what they needed to do, and learning how to do it things in a different way. But also there's that sense, there's all this awfulness going on in the world. My problems aren't so important. I'll just carry on and deal with it. And actually that was borne out within that mind research as well. People were less inclined to seek support because they feared that their concerns weren't as important as others or weren't as serious.
I think you can totally sort of empathize with that point of view, can't you? That idea that when... And I remember those days, you know, where you'd see that the death toll on the TV was shockingly high, and you'd be thinking, goodness me, and people around you, close to you, you'd be hearing about deaths, and you'd be thinking, you know, if you could just, you know, disappear into a little bubble and come back out in 6 months or a year, I think a lot of people would have taken that particular option as well. But at the same time, people also had that job uncertainty around what's going to be next, what's going to be next for my role, is it going to exist? But from what you've just described there, you know, firefighters who went through that, and of course think, well, I am the front line, you know, I'm needed now more than ever. But there's only certain amounts of sort of training that you can have, and only certain amounts of resilience that you can build up over a certain period of time before, I imagine, that becomes almost exhausted. And I think it became quite early on that this wasn't going to be something that we would beat in 6 weeks, that it was going to be an extended. And I wonder if that was part of the thing, that people actually couldn't see an end at all to that pandemic sort of stage, particularly in the early stages.
I think it was also new. You know, so people were very focused on the new challenges they were facing, both professionally and personally. So it almost becomes quite a small world in that sense, because you're focusing on, well, is my family okay? Can I keep my family safe? How am I going to be at work? Can I perform my duties properly? There was a lot of areas to juggle at that point in time, I think, and no certainty about how things were going to progress. How is it going to be? So people focused on the areas that they could control.
And I guess, you know, you're the psychological services lead, so I guess people would almost look to you for answers. But I guess from your professional point of view, as well as a personal point of view, you also didn't know those wider answers about how long it would go on. So how did you sort of respond to that? How did you sort of shape your responses?
So as a charity, we were quite aware that we needed to be there to support our beneficiaries. And COVID has coincided with our new strategic plan as well, which we've got a 5-year strategic plan. And one of the areas in there is about inform and prevent, and another area about respond and recover. So we looked very much at service development, looking at, well, okay, our centres are closed, how are we going to support our beneficiaries? So we focused a lot of our energies into expanding our digital services. So we set up an online and telephone counselling service, which went live in August, and we set up online physio services as well. And obviously we've got a support line as well. So we were responding to calls from anybody who dialed in, you know, whether it was, I'm struggling with this, or actually I'm in a real state of crisis and I need some help and I don't know where to go. Because our difficulty from a psychological services point of view was that a lot of the organisations that people would ordinarily go to were also shut. So particularly in the first lockdown, so places where people went for support and connection weren't there. So that was particularly challenging for us as well.
And I wonder whether or not, and I don't know if this is the case or not, but I certainly get a sense that because of the nature of the pandemic, I think a lot of people feel a lot more like they've been given almost permission to talk about their mental health and permission to talk about their sense of feelings. And I wondered when you started receiving those phone calls, did you get a sense that these were issues which purely existed as a result of coronavirus? Or did you get a sense that maybe these were people who probably could have spoken to you 2 years ago, 3 years ago, about maybe some of those issues? They were simply heightened by what they were experiencing because of the pandemic.
I think what we've learned over the past year is that people's normal coping strategies have been adversely challenged by COVID. So what we found as the year has progressed is that because coping strategies tend to be connecting with family and friends, maybe going to the pub, or just sort of socialising, having that social connection, and also physical exercise with gym shut and swimming pool shut and things, that's, we've seen more people with more stress, anxiety, depression that probably was managed better before, because they could use those coping strategies. And then as the year's gone on, those levels of stress and anxiety may have increased because it's felt like at times there's no end to it, and there's been no certainty of when that end will come.
So what has been the offer from people like yourself in those sorts of circumstances, when you can't have those sort of like in-house face-to-face meetings? You've got the digital sort of strategy set up. So what's the digital experience, if you like?
So we offer one-to-one therapy to our beneficiaries, up to 6 sessions of one-to-one therapy. We also have been working on developing webinars to give early help and information. So we ran some webinars on alcohol, because we know that throughout COVID, people have been drinking more than they would do before. So sort of looking at our relationship with alcohol. We've also developed our health content on our website. So we've spent a lot of time putting in additional articles and videos and things so that people can access resources from our website. And we have a Shout podcast, so we run a fortnightly health and wellbeing podcast, which can be accessed through the usual channels and through our website on a range of health and wellbeing.
You got my attention at podcast. No, absolutely. And the needs, absolutely there. Let's just recap those stats here. Mental health has worsened across all 999 services. This really concerned me as well. Those within the fire service asked about how they rated their mental health. 1 in 5 described it as poor or very poor. Now, that strikes me as a particularly high number. How would you respond to that stat? What did you make of it when you heard that statistic?
It is shocking. I think on the plus side, there is a greater openness and dialogue about mental health issues than there has ever been. So there's still quite a long way to go, but we're on the right trajectory. There is a belief quite often in firefighters and other first-line responders about their needs are unimportant. And we're trying to create a shift where we become the first port of call rather than the last port of call. And we've got a network of health and wellbeing coaches that are going out to fire and rescue services, to the stations, virtually at the moment, but hopefully in person soon, actually delivering education on what to look out for, how you can get help at an earlier stage, because that statistic was worrying, you know. And the way in which you can get a shift in that is by early education, I think, and information to prevent people's mental health worsening.
Can I ask you about sort of the cultures within those sort of conversations as well? Because I think if you ask most people and they said firefighters, they would think there's almost a macho sense to that, which is probably based on TV shows and adverts more than anything else. But what have you found to be sort of those cultures? Are those sort of like man up or woman up cultures where you think, well, you've got to crack on no matter what? Which seems okay as an idea, but actually in the long run can potentially mask some much wider issues.
I can only speak from my experience and my experience of the charity. And certainly what I've found is there's very much a task-focused approach to work. You know, we'll work together, we'll get this done. And there's, within the fire service, there's a lot of camaraderie because people work in watches, so they're used to getting that support from their peers. We're fortunate in terms of the charity that the firefighters trust the charity. So we find that people will engage with us earlier than I would expect if I was working as an independent therapist, for example. So we have that trust, which is a great help in actually supporting our beneficiaries. And also we've got a beneficiary base of about 300,000 because we support the operational firefighters, but we also support control room staff, families. So we've got quite a wide range of people that we support across the fire and rescue service,
which is a brilliant number of people to be able to reach out to and to make a genuine difference to as well. I'm just going to recap the website, firefighterscharity.org.uk/support. That's firefighterscharity.org.uk/support. And that helpline number as well, the support line number, 0800 389 8820. That's 0800 389 8820 that people can reach out if they work within the fire service as well. Of course, Mind have got their Blue Light project as well. Issues within the 999 services have been long talked about. In terms of moving forward, Jane, many people have said to me on the programme that maybe there are issues now which we won't see for 12 or 18 months, 2 years or 3 years. Those sort of long-standing issues which have maybe bedded themselves in during this time but won't emerge as a problem. How are you sort of minded to deal with that? What sort of things are you able to put in place that allows you to do that preventative work, that proactive work that prevents you having a problem come 2023 or 2024?
Okay, so we're expanding our group-based interventions because we know that firefighters, they really benefit from the support from each other. So we think that will be a good avenue to go down, actually, and create peer support networks across the fire and rescue service. Obviously, we've got the education in terms of health and wellbeing coaches going out to fire stations. We also know that firefighters struggle with the transition into retirement because of losing that social connection. And that has been particularly exacerbated over the pandemic because they haven't been able to socialise and meet up with their peers once they have retired. So we've got Living Well groups, which are groups targeted specifically for retired beneficiaries, where they can connect and come together. So we've been doing that online. They used to be face-to-face, but they've been online. We're looking at how long COVID is affecting our beneficiaries, because we're very aware there's sort of recent research is indicating that people who put others' needs ahead of their own tend to be particularly affected by long COVID. And we're starting to see that now. So we're looking at how we meet that through both digital and face-to-face programs at our centres, because for operational firefighters, their role depends on their physicality. And actually to lose confidence in your body is really anxiety provoking and stressful. So we're looking at how we can, you know, support beneficiaries to begin to regain that confidence in their body, because not only is it losing confidence in your body, but they're stressed because you need to pass fitness tests at work. So how is that impacting on my job? You know, there's all those additional pressures which somebody who works in an office wouldn't encounter.
And also it very much fits into that narrative that we touched on before, that it wasn't just a short 3-month problem and then suddenly COVID went away and everybody went back to work. Clearly, it's an issue which is going to be around for a long time. But then these other issues like long COVID, which nobody had even thought or heard of, you know, at the start of the pandemic, suddenly becomes something you've got to work into your medium and long-term strategies, which just goes to show sort of how invasive coronavirus has been in sort of all walks of life.
Yes, yeah, definitely. It's added another layer to an already complicated picture.
Absolutely, absolutely. The 1 in 5 who say, you know, their mental health is poor or very poor, means we don't talk about the 4 in 5 who say their mental health is in a better place. What are the sort of stories there? What are the positive narratives that you're hearing about how people have been able to galvanize themselves, work through some of the problems and keep themselves on a decent level? Is that because of the interventions, or is that because of other cultures that sort of exist within the services?
I think that's mainly because they draw support from one another. You know, the Mind research also indicated there's an overall sense that emergency responders will look out for one another and also feel more able to talk about their mental health with each other, because they understand, they get it, you know. And I think that's why people come to the charity, because they know that we understand their particular challenges, which are different, you know.
No, absolutely. And it's why it's so great that the service is there and that there's so much sort of trust and support. You mentioned 300,000, you know, beneficiaries there, which is an incredible base of people who know where to turn when they need support. And I think this is where other industries are trying to get to. It's where other services are trying to get to, where you have that direct link between I need to speak to somebody and I know who to speak to. Which, if you guys have got down at the Firefighters Charity, you don't need to keep it within yourself. You need to be spreading that message far and wide, because that's one which people are crying out for. How can we get people to engage with these services? How can we make sure that it doesn't just become a poster on a wall or something you keep on a notice board? It actually becomes part of the culture of an office space or within an industry. And I think you guys have obviously got something right there, that so many people have been so keen to reach out and get support, because there's nothing worse than, you know, launching a helpline and nobody calls, not because they don't need it, but because they don't know about it or they don't trust in it. And I think you guys have obviously done something right. And I think if you can bottle that up, there'll be many people who'll be keen to find out what that is and how they can make that work for their own particular business.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really privileged working for the charity, because we are well supported by the Fire and Rescue Service. We are out there, and there is this trust, which that's so valuable. You can't underestimate the power of that trust.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk, if we can, almost directly to those who work within the fire service. And as you say, it's not just those, you know, the Cats Up Trees Brigade, if you like. And again, there's the TV shows and the adverts creeping back in, but also many of the people who work with the support staff and various different roles in between as well. for those who are struggling, for those who have struggled, who maybe have seen the posters, who've maybe heard about the helpline, can you give us a sense of a walkthrough of what happens when you do reach out to somebody like yourself, and just so that people feel less afraid of what's, you know, at the end of a phone call or what they'll see on a website?
Yeah, I mean, you can contact the charity either via a web inquiry, which is just a short form, or by calling the support line number. And at that very first point of entry, you will be speaking to a skilled professional who will be there to help you, who understands the myriad of ways in which the charity can help, because we try and tailor solutions to the individual needs of the beneficiary, because we're all unique. And we offer a wide range of solutions, from physical solutions to mental health solutions to social solutions as well through our welfare teams. So we can tailor support. And when you call into the support line, one of our skilled professionals will help navigate your way through that. So you'll be supported all the way. When you come into psychological services, you know, you will be speaking to qualified, experienced therapists who will be there, able to support you.
So if people want to get involved in that, you know, and 1 in 5 people working within the service rating their mental health as poor or very poor, that number 0800 389 8820, that's the Firefighters Charity support number, 0800 389 8820. For somebody, Jane, who has never called that number, or is unsure about calling that number, is unsure that you'll understand and doesn't know whether or not it's the right thing to do to reach out, what would you say to them?
I would say have a look at our website. We've got a lot of case studies on there from people who have been supported by the charity, and that will give you a sense of what we can offer and how we can help. So I know it's difficult. It can be really difficult to make that first call. If you have any concerns or you are worried, I would just peruse the website, maybe listen to one of the podcasts, the Shout podcast, just to get a sense of how we are, and maybe ask some colleagues at work, because they, you know, you may well find there's somebody who's been helped.
Absolutely. And in terms of the geography, are you operating UK wide? Is it England and Wales? How do you operate?
No, we operate UK wide. But we've got 3 centres, one in Penrith in the Lake District, one in Devon, which is where I'm based, and one in Littlehampton in West Sussex. So those are our 3 residential services. But of course, because we're offering digital support as well, that has a national reach. So that's been one really positive outcome from the pandemic, is that we are more accessible to more people. And obviously webinars and resources on the website can be accessed by anybody who works for the Fire and Rescue Service.
And I was going to say that, and I guess that means that it allows us to say that fire service personnel, wherever they are, can reach out to your services, because you can find a sort of a bespoke sort of service that can work for them.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I know over the last year I've worked with people from all over the UK, so...
Well, fingers crossed people are continuing to hear the messages of support, reaching out to you, which keeps your workload up, Jane, but I'm sure you're ready and equipped to deal with that one. Yeah. That website, let's mention it again, firefighterscharity.org.uk/support. That's firefighterscharity.org.uk/support. And the support line number as well, which you can call if you work in the service, 0800 389 8820. That's 0800 389 8820. Jane Rosso, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate you speaking to us, the Psychological Services Lead at the Firefighters Charity, and I guess this week for Mental Health Monday.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 852 858. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.